Welcome to Total Health Transformation Podcast, hosted by Dr. Danny Scarhill. Dr. Danny is a doctor of chiropractic, an author, speaker, and trainer. And on the THT podcast, he interviews other health experts to glean further insights that will help you achieve total health transformation.
Welcome to the Total Health Transformation Podcast. My name's Dr. Danny Scarhill, the founder of DannyScarhill.com, the author of Total Health Transformation, the proven system to unlock limitless energy, motivation, and health, and the creator of the Total Health Transformation programs. Let's get straight into it on this episode.
Renowned holistic physician and lecturer, Dr. Bradley Nelson, skillfully lays bare the inner workings of the subconscious mind. He reveals how emotionally charged events from your past can still be haunting you in the form of trapped emotions, emotional energies that literally inhabit your body. Dr. Nelson explains clearly and concisely how trapped emotions can create pain, malfunction, and eventual disease. In addition, trapped emotions can exert a dramatic effect on how you think, the choices that you make, and how successful you will be. The emotion code is a distinct and authoritative new work that is destined to become an instant classic on self-healing. Without further ado, welcome Dr. Brad Nelson.
Thank you, Danny. It's so great to be here.
Excellent. Very much appreciate you taking out some time to be with us today. So along your journey, Brad, to get to where you are now, tell us a little bit about your journey to giving birth, if you like, to the emotion code.
Okay. Well, you know, I'll tell you, it actually goes back to when I was 7 years old, believe it or not. I was really sick when I was seven with the measles. And there was talk, I remember, I overheard my parents talking as I was lying there so sick about the next day I was going into the hospital and I was going into what they called an oxygen tent. I'd never heard of that before. And as a seven-year-old, a tent sounded interesting, but I was too sick to really enjoy it. I didn't know what it meant. But something happened that I have never, ever forgotten. And I think if I live to be a million years old, I never will forget it. It was an incredible experience that happened to me. My folks had made a bed for me on the couch upstairs so I could be near their room. And this one evening, everyone had gone to bed except my folks. And suddenly they walked into the room. And they were on their way to bed, too. And my mother said to my father, she said, "Daddy, will you kneel down with me and say a prayer for our boy here that he'll be able to get well?" And I don't think that I'd probably ever heard my dad pray before that. But they knelt down by the side of the couch, and my dad started to offer this prayer for me. And as he was praying, I suddenly had this change that started at the top of my head. And it went whoosh through my body about that fast. And I was instantly made well. And it's an absolutely unforgettable thing to be really, really sick one moment. And then in the next moment to be completely well. You don't ever forget that as long as you live. It's just unbelievable. And I held my tongue. I didn't say anything until he was done, which didn't take long. And then when he was done, I said, "I'm well. I'm better. Heavenly Father fixed me." And they said, "All right, honey, that's fine. You just go to sleep now." They weren't buying it. But the next day proved that I was totally better. And so I learned at that young age that there is a higher power than us that we can draw upon, and miracles can happen because I had experienced one myself. And so So then what happened, fast forward about another 7 years, and I ended up with kidney disease. And there was nothing that could be done for me medically. I would get these terrific pains in the back like a knife. And these pains would sometimes put me on the ground. And so my parents took me to the big medical clinic in our hometown. And they ran all these tests on me, and they said, "Well, I've got this kidney disease. There's nothing really that can be done." It was serious, but they didn't really have any treatments available. And so I was either going to get well or I wasn't. And so that was all they had to offer. So my mother was very open to alternative medicine. And so especially. And so so my folks took me to see a couple of old time osteopathic doctors who lived on the edge of town in a trailer house. And I remember when it would rain, you'd have to scrape the mud off your boots to get into this trailer house of theirs that was sort of their little clinic. But they had busloads of people, I remember, that would come to visit them from different states and so on. And they were miracle workers. They were amazing. And they told me that I had a bone out of alignment in my back that was interfering with the nerve transmission, with the communication between my brain and my kidneys. And they started working on that bone, putting that bone back into alignment, and correcting, doing some other things to fix me. And within a few weeks, I was feeling so much better. And not long after that, I had forgotten that I'd ever been sick because the pains were gone. So my folks took me back to the clinic and they ran all the tests again. And they said, well, it's a spontaneous remission. It's remarkable. You know, whatever we did must have helped. And they hadn't done anything. And so I decided at that age, I was 13. I decided that's what I wanted to do with my life. I wanted to be a doctor, and not just any doctor. I wanted to be that kind of doctor. And if I needed to practice out on the edge of town in a muddy field in a trailer house, that was totally okay with me because that's the kind of doctor that actually got people well. And so that was a very formative lesson for me. Well, so I can remember going and visiting them and telling them, when I grow up, I want to do what you do. And I very distinctly remember them telling me, no, if you go to chiropractic school or some other type of healing school, they'll fill your head so full of dogma that you won't be able to think when you get out. And so you won't really be of much use to anybody, and you won't really be able to heal people. And so that stuck with me too. So then fast forward a few more years, I got into computers and became a computer programmer and got into business and loved all of that. And I was about 6 months away from going into the MBA program, the Master's in Business at Brigham Young University in Provo, Utah. And we went home, my wife and I went home to visit my folks. And we were talking with my mother and father, and my dad all of a sudden said to me out of the blue, he said, are you sure you don't want to go to chiropractic school? Because it seems like a great career, and you've always wanted to do it. And I said, no, I'm going this other direction now. And he said, well, why don't you think about it one more time? My dad was very wise. And so I took his advice and thought about both directions now. And this dream of mine to go to school and go into the healing arts and become a chiropractor, that kind of had faded. But now suddenly it was on the plate again in front of me. And now I had these two choices, two alternative futures. And now I couldn't decide. So I got on my knees that night and I prayed. I learned at age 7, there's a higher power that you can ask for help. And I asked for help, and I had a dream. Actually, I don't know if I can call it a dream, but it was interesting. What happened to me that night? I was awake in 3 different times. It was like I'd been having a dream, but when I woke up, I couldn't remember the dream. It was just the aftermath of the dream. I was filled with these warm, happy thoughts about going into the healing arts and helping people naturally. And I'd wake up and I'd feel those feelings, and then I would think, well, yeah, but computers are so great, and, you know, and I'd fall back asleep again. And that happened 3 times that night. And so the next night, I still don't know what to do. I'm on my knees and praying and asking God for help. And that night, that second night, really changed my life because and it's actually changed thousands of people's lives all over the world, because on that second night, I had the same experience. I was awakened 3 different times. And my mind, when I would awaken, my mind was filled with thoughts of service to people and how great it is to heal people naturally. But on the second night, each time I was awakened, the thoughts were progressively, geometrically more powerful, until the third time on that second night, I woke up and my mind was just overwhelmed with how wonderful it is to help the world and to help mankind and to heal the world. And it was absolutely just overwhelming. And right at that moment, as I'm feeling those feelings, I actually heard a voice that spoke to me, as clear as I'm speaking to you right now. And it said, this is a sacred calling. And I knew that was my answer. And so that was it. And so I went to school, but I was really on guard because of what these healers had told me many years before, that that I'd come out of school and I would accept all kinds of healing methods as being the best ways to do things when maybe there were better ways. And so that's, I was always on guard, and no matter what anybody said, no matter what my instructor said, that this is the best way to do this or this is the best way to do that, I always took everything with a grain of salt, thinking, well, maybe there's a better way. And so when I got into practice, I got in the habit of asking for help. Each person that I saw, I would try to make that connection to that higher power and ask for help. And as time went on, there was more and more information that just kind of came down. And there were times, Danny, especially during the last 10 years of practice, I was working with people who, most of my patients had been told there was no cure for them and nothing could be done. And especially during those last 10 years, there were times when I would offer that silent prayer for help to God, and the information would just flood into my mind about what that person needed. And sometimes it was a totally different way of looking at things than I had ever considered before. And so I was very successful during all those years at getting people well, and I saw all kinds of different problems. But one of the most profound things that I learned during those years was that no matter what a person is suffering from, whether it's some kind of a physical illness, whether it's migraine headaches or infertility or asthma or digestive problems or back pain or neck pain or whatever it is, or if it's something mental, emotional, like depression or anxiety or phobias or panic attacks, no matter what it is, all of those things have underlying emotional roots, okay? And so what I found is that our emotional baggage is the single biggest underlying cause of all of these kinds of problems. And I gradually, as time went on, I figured out how to identify that emotional baggage and how to get rid of that emotional baggage in a very, very rapid way. And once I figured this out, I started teaching it right away because I was driven. I felt people need to know this. People can do this for themselves. They need to understand this. And so I started teaching seminars and traveling all over. And so I had my practice I was working in 40 or 60 hours a week. And then I'd fly off on weekends and teach seminars on how to get rid of emotional baggage. And I was wearing myself out. It was hard on my family. And I finally got a message from up above that said, you need to get out of your practice and you need to write a book. And this message needs to go to the whole world. And so that book is The Emotion Code that teaches people how to get rid of their emotional baggage, how to find it. And it's been a really amazing, amazing journey. And so that's kind of what brought me to the point that where I am right now.
That's an amazing story with lots of powerful moments and powerful lessons, even when you were a small child. It's fantastic. So between then and now, and you're, as being a chiropractor myself, we're always trying to be as healthy as we can and role model as best we can. What failures did you have over the years with regards to your health, and what were the biggest lessons you learned from them?
Well, you know, the my mind goes back to that that situation when I was seven, and when I was so sick and was instantly healed. And I think for my own life, what I've seen is that my own health and my own functionality physically and mentally, like everyone else, the biggest impediment for me, besides food, okay, which I'll talk about in just a minute, has really actually been my emotional baggage as well. In fact, I have to tell you a story that happened to me. My ancestors on my father's side were from Ireland. Excuse me. And you're in Dublin right now, is that right?
Yeah, I used to live there. I'm near London these days.
Now you're near London. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I've got ancestors from on my mom's side, came from Wales primarily, and But I asked my daughter to work on me one day, and this was a couple of years after the Emotion Code book came out. And so one of the beautiful things about the Emotion Code is that it's possible we teach people how you can actually work on other people at a distance. There's no barrier of distance. It's energy work. And I believe it's one of the purest forms of energy work on the planet. And so she's working on me, and she comes across this emotion that I have. It's a trapped emotion of hopelessness. And it's actually, she finds, inherited, that I had inherited this from my father. Now, sometimes we inherit emotions, emotional energies at the moment of conception. And so I had inherited this from my dad. And at the moment that I was conceived, he passed that to me. But he had inherited it at the moment he was conceived from his mother, who had inherited it from her mother at the moment of conception. And so my daughter is tracing all this back using muscle testing and finds that that this emotion of hopelessness originated with a grandmother of mine about 22 generations back, sometime probably in the 1500s. Now, when she found this emotion, suddenly she could feel the presence of this grandmother standing right next to her. And she could feel her emotions. She could feel how desperate she was to have this energy released from her posterity. That's what she'd passed on to her posterity, generation upon generation. We have no way of knowing, of course, what went on in her life, but she was right there. My daughter could feel her presence, and it wasn't a spooky sort of a thing. She just knew she was there, and she could feel also how overwhelmed with gratitude this woman was that this work was being done, that this emotion was being released. So she released that emotion, and she could feel it ripple through all those generations, all those grandmothers, all the way back. And I was about 1,200 miles away at the moment that happened. And there was an amazing thing that happened to me. And this is one of the most profound healings that's happened in my whole life. What happened was I had been really battling all my life this background feeling of hopelessness. I didn't really even know that it was there. I just knew that it was a challenge, that life was kind of challenging for me. And when I would, for example, when I wrote the Emotion Code book, it took me years longer than it should have because I felt that it was hopeless. I literally felt that. And every time that I would write, I would have to psych myself up by listening to really positive things to overcome that hopeless energy that was in my body that I didn't even know was there. But the moment that my daughter released that trapped emotion, it was like a factory that had been running all my life that was continually making this background noise suddenly shut off. And I knew and understood and comprehended instantly what it was. I knew what the emotion was because suddenly the silence was deafening. And that really was a huge thing that changed my whole life. Now, as far as food goes, I think that food is a big challenge for so many of us because we love to eat. And food is yummy. And the problem now is that we live in a world where so much food is processed, and we are further and further, it seems, every year in a lot of ways from the kind of diet that our grandparents and our great-grandparents ate. So what I have found in my own life is that I don't do well on grains. Most people don't do very well on wheat anymore, unless it's actually heritage grains that are grown the way they used to be. Wheat anymore is nothing like it used to be, especially in the U.S. And so a lot of people have problems with wheat. I'm sorry, I'm getting a call on my phone that I forgot to shut off. So we might have to edit that a little bit. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's fine. Just recap on what you were just saying, mate.
Okay. So many people have gluten sensitivities, for example. Many people don't do well on wheat. Wheat is really kind of a toxin now to the body. Corn as well, especially here in the States. 80 or 90% of all the corn that's grown is genetically modified and so on. So the other problem is that there are lots and lots of additives that are put into food, lots of chemicals. And so one of the problems that we have, especially here in the U.S., is with obesity. So many people are obese, and a huge underlying cause of that obesity is these food additives that are put into food. MSG, for example, is in lots of food. And if you Google MSG-treated rodents, you'll find that there are lots of hits there. That's how scientists create obese rodents to study in the lab. They just give them MSG, and it makes them very, very fat. So there's this huge debate raging over here about what's going on and why there's so much obesity and childhood obesity. And hello, the food that we're eating is so adulterated and so toxified. And of course, aspartame now, the artificial sweetener, is in practically everything. You have to go to a health food store now here in the States to buy gum that doesn't have aspartame in it. It's in all the drinks, it's in everything. And of course, we know that's very, very toxic. So as far as diet goes, my advice there is to eat things as close to the soil as you can, and try to avoid eating things as much as you can that have labels. Because generally, if your food has to have a label to explain what's in it, there are probably things in it that you want to avoid.
It's a very good point. Yeah, don't eat foods with a label on it. I like that. Yeah, I mean, and in this country as well, I mean, in the States, you guys are obviously way ahead on the scale of obesity, no pun intended. But in the UK...
Sad, but true.
Yeah, in the UK, we're not too far behind you. We used to be light years behind you guys in everything, but we're catching up on obesity rapidly. I'm very, very sad to say.
Yeah, that is really unfortunate. And it's all about the food that we eat. You know, the old saying that most people dig their grave with their teeth is unfortunately really true. And so I'm a big fan of the Price Pottinger Foundation. They promulgate the work of Dr. Weston Price and Dr. Pottinger. Pottinger did a study on cats. And the study was very famous, known as the Pottinger's Cats study. And what he found was that cats who were given raw food, raw meat, for example, did really, really well. And the more cooked food they were given, the less well they did. In fact, if they were put on a diet that was primarily cooked food, within a couple of generations, they became sterile and lost the ability to reproduce, and they had all kinds of other problems as well. And so, and then it was Dr. Weston Price traveled the world in the middle part of the last century, documenting tribes, Aboriginal tribes that had never had any human contact. And what he was doing is he was measuring their teeth and measuring their skulls and so on. And then he would come back after they had a Western medical sort of a Western diet introduced to them with refined foods and sugars and so on, and found that all kinds of changes would take place in the skull of people who were on a diet that was further removed from a natural diet, as they ate less fats and as they ate less meats and more carbs and more refined foods, the skulls would change and they would become narrower. And as generations would go on, a subsequent generation would have teeth that would be very crowded, and their ears would stick out. And so, in our society, for example, it's very common for kids to need braces. But he found in those old societies before the Western diet was introduced, those people had perfect teeth, and he took photographs to prove it. And so, it's an amazing thing; they had no cavities. Everybody had perfect teeth, and then he documented through photography as time went on and as their diet was more and more Westernized how bad their teeth became. So there's an awful lot to it, and I think that we're finally starting to understand that eating foods the way that our ancestors ate is a lot healthier than the way we're eating now in a lot of cases.
Oh yeah, without question, as you say, we're so far removed from how we're supposed to eat, how we're supposed to move, and how we're supposed to think in comparison to our ancestors. So yeah, it's no surprise that there's so much disease and ill health out there, because people aren't doing what the bodies are supposed to do, are they? It's quite simple, really.
It is.
So, do you know when you do your work with the emotion code, you do stuff like the sway test and muscle testing and stuff like that? For those mm-hmm. that have never heard about it, can you tell us a bit about the sway test and maybe demonstrate it for the listeners?
Yes, absolutely. Well, for example, you might have been wondering when I was telling about how my daughter was able to identify that inherited emotion. How was she able to find that? How do we find trapped emotions that were inherited at conception? Or how do we find a trapped emotion that might have occurred when you were a child that you may not have any memory of? It's possible for us to pick up emotional energies from a parent when we're actually in the womb. And so we have no memory, no way of identifying those emotions unless we tap into the subconscious mind. Now, if you think about it, the conscious mind is where we spend our time. It's where we make our decisions. That's the active part of our brain. That part of us is like the tip of the iceberg, okay? When you see an iceberg out there in the water, the tip of the iceberg, you know, is just a small fraction of the iceberg itself. The vast bulk of that iceberg, 90% of that iceberg or 95% of that iceberg, is probably below the waterline. And so that's the subconscious mind. The subconscious is like the part of the iceberg that's under the water that you can't see. Our subconscious mind, though, is incredibly intelligent. The subconscious mind is the part of us that is digesting our food. It's creating the cells in our body. It's birthing new cells, millions every second. And it's the part of us that's keeping us alive. Well, the conscious part of us doesn't remember much, but the subconscious mind remembers everything. In fact, I remember a story. I was doing a workshop once, and a young woman came up out of the audience, and I tested her to see if she had any trapped emotions. She was about 21 years old, I think, and there was a trapped emotion that showed up. Now, what we do is we use muscle testing to tap into the subconscious mind. So she held out her arm. I asked questions, and her arm would be strong on my downward pressure for a yes answer, or it would go weak for a no answer. The body is basically a binary computer, and it can answer any question that you want as long as the answer is yes or no. So doing this method of testing, I found that she had a trapped emotion. And we have a chart of emotions, has 60 emotions on it. It's divided into two columns and six rows, and I was able very quickly to identify the emotions that were in there in that chart. And we figured out that the emotion was forlorn. And so then I started to trace it back. Forlorn is feeling all alone and kind of hopeless and destitute. And I traced it back using muscle testing, just asking her subconscious mind when this had occurred. And it went back to 1 year old. It had occurred during that first year of her life. And I asked her if she had any idea what this was about. And of course, she had no idea. But at the beginning of this event, I had met her mother and her when the two of them arrived together. And I happened to look out at the audience at that moment to see if her mother had anything to say about this. And she was as white as a sheet. And she had her hands covering her mouth and nose. And I asked her if she had any idea what this was about. And she was very embarrassed, but she said that she thought she did. She said that back in those days, she used to use cloth diapers. And one day she accidentally pinned her daughter to the diaper with a safety pin. And so she put the pin right through her daughter's skin and didn't know it. And so her daughter cried, but she didn't know it until she changed her the next time. So it kind of gives a clue into how overwhelmed she must have been. And then she was horrified to find that she'd pinned her poor daughter to this diaper. Well, the wound healed up and everything, and they thought that that was the end of it back then, many years ago. So I found this emotion, and we found out that that's exactly what had created this trapped emotion, and we released the trapped emotion. And to release an emotion, you just use your fingertips or a magnet. You just run down the middle of the back a few times, and just take seconds. And so she went back and sat down, and I forgot about it, and the meeting was over. And about 10 days later, this woman, her mother, sent me a message, and she said, my daughter Jessica didn't tell you about this problem that she's had, actually, for a number of years. She's had trouble with her hip, and with her knee, and it's been affecting the way that she walks, and we've taken her to different doctors, and no one's been able to figure out what the problem is. But she said, from the moment you release that trapped emotion from her, that hip pain and knee pain has been completely gone, and she's walking totally normally. And she said, not only that, she has this new lightness of being that she's never felt before, and she's really excited and really happy. She's telling everyone about this. And so there's a perfect example of how an emotion can become stuck in the body, and you may not even have any memory of it, yet it can definitely be affecting you right now. So it's really important to get rid of these emotional energies. Well, let me share with you the simplest, easiest way to tap into your own subconscious mind. They say that to duplicate the subconscious mind, if we were to try to really attempt that, not too long ago, they said that it would take a computer as tall as the Empire State Building and the size of the state of Texas. And what they were really saying is that we never really will be able to duplicate consciousness. We will never really be able to create a computer that that is a living being, basically, and that has the incredible level of intelligence our beings have. But we can tap into that subconscious mind. And here's how this works. Imagine that you take a plant and you put it into a room that has uniform lighting in the ceiling, lighting all around, and it's all grow lights. That plant will tend to grow if you water it in that room, won't it, Danny?
Absolutely, yeah.
All right, now, imagine that you put a speaker in the room and you start playing classical or beautiful, soothing music, lullabies. Did you know they've actually done this in the lab? And what they find is the plant will actually, in a situation like that, where normally the plant would just grow straight up, that plant will grow towards the music coming out of that speaker. It's a fascinating thing. What they've also found in the lab is that if you change the music in that speaker and you play blasting, harsh, grating kinds of music or sounds coming out of that speaker, and you let that play for a month or so, you'll find that the plant will actually have grown away from the music coming out of that speaker. In fact, even the roots will be bent away from the sound coming out of that speaker. Isn't that interesting?
Makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, the human body is the same way. The human body has this innate ability to sway. It'll sway forward if you allow it to. If you're holding thoughts of truth or positivity or congruency, or you're looking at a beautiful painting, or there is music playing from a speaker in front of you that's beautiful. On the other hand, if you're thinking negative thoughts or incongruent thoughts or untrue thoughts, your body, instead of swaying forward, it will tend to sway backward away from those thoughts of negativity or falsehood or incongruency. So it's a fascinating thing. So you can do this, and your listeners can do this as well. Here's how this works. Now, if you're sitting and you can't stand up, this also works, but what you'll need to do is just sit right on the edge of your chair, okay, and put your feet flat on the floor. If you're standing, it works a little better standing. That's usually how most people do it. If you're standing, go ahead and close your eyes, drop your hands down to your sides, and totally relax. And just listen to my voice. And what I want you to do is I want you to think, first of all, about something negative. Let's think for a moment about war. War, I think, is about the most negative thing that happens on the planet. It's been going on since day one, still going on. But and of course, we hear that word every day and we kind of become numb to it. But what I'd like you to do for a moment is I'd like you to imagine what really goes on in war. Imagine you had to explain war and what really happens on a human scale to someone who had no understanding of war, didn't have any idea what that word meant. Imagine yourself explaining what war really means. What happens to individuals in war? What really happens to families? What happens to villages and what happens to cities when bombs are dropped and when chemicals are used or people are killed or maimed and families are destroyed? Think of all the tears that have been shed on this planet since day one over wars that have been fought and that are still being fought. Now, as you're standing there totally relaxed, the moment your subconscious mind actually makes a connection and comes into resonance with what that word actually means, not in an abstract way, but in a real way, on a human level, at that moment, your subconscious mind will make you start to sway backwards away from the sheer negativity of that thought, just like the plant will grow away from negative music. Now, let's shift gears for a moment. Let's think about something really, really positive. Okay, I'd like you to think about gratitude. Think about someone in your life that you really love or that you're really grateful to. Maybe someone that has helped you in some way or done a wonderful thing for you. I can think, for example, about my own parents. Maybe it's your parents, or maybe it's your wife, or maybe a child, or someone, maybe a mentor, someone who's really helped you. Think about that person or that situation and allow your heart to fill with gratitude. Imagine if that person were in front of you right now. Think about what you might say to them, how you might express your gratitude for how they've helped you in your life. Allow your heart to fill with gratitude. And as you allow your heart to fill with gratitude to overflowing for that person, what you'll find is that your subconscious mind will start to make your body sway forward towards those beautiful thoughts, that high, high energy of gratitude. And so what we're showing you here is that the subconscious mind can actually speak to you through your physical body, okay? And the sway test is a method that is what we call this. It's been used for many, many years. I didn't invent it by any means, but it's a method of tapping into that subconscious mind. Now, ask a question. Form a thought in your mind and focus on this thought. And here's the thought I want you to ask. Do I have trapped emotions? Do I have trapped emotions? Focus on that thought and then allow your body to do whatever it wants to do. Do I have trapped emotions? And you'll most likely find yourself swaying forward. That's the body's way of saying, yes, I have trapped emotions. And so this is a very, very simple, easy way that anyone can use to tap into the subconscious mind. In fact, in the Emotion Code book, this is the first method that we teach people the first method of actually tapping in and getting answers. Now, you can use this method to actually find trapped emotions in the body as well, and you can release them as well. Now, would you like me to do a demonstration on this?
That would be fantastic, yeah.
All right, great, let's do that. So let me ask you this. Now, when I'm doing a demonstration, oftentimes I'll ask people if they have any kind of a physical symptom going on, because 90% of the time, if you have physical symptoms of pain or discomfort or something, those symptoms are actually being caused by emotional baggage, by trapped emotions. And so if there's any kind of a physical symptom, if you've got any kind of an ache or a pain or anything that's bothering you right now, I can show you that it's probably due to some emotional baggage. And the nice thing about demonstrating it this way is that there's an immediate change that takes place. So you'll be able to feel a change. Now, if you don't have any kind of physical symptom, that's fine. We can zero in on any other type of symptom that you might have. If there's any other kind of an issue, maybe that you might have going on in your life, we can zero in and see if there's an emotional underlying reason for that as well.
But there was, not so much now, but last week, happens mm-hmm. from time to time, with due to the nature of my work, some mm-hmm. problems in the low back and hip pain,
okay.
particularly on the left side.
Okay.
It's fine right now, but it's a recurring thing, so there must be something there.
Okay, let's take a look. So what we teach people is that the emotion code and the other work that we do with the body code and so on, I believe has really all come down from up above, and it's really God's gift to the world at this time. And so because it all came from up above, what we find is that it really works best if you take a moment and connect with that higher power, whatever you believe that higher power to be. And so that's what I'm going to do for you right now. I'm going to just take a moment and ask for some help from our Father in heaven. Okay. All right. So let's ask, and I'm going to be muscle testing on myself and getting answers on my own body here. And we teach all of these methods in the emotion code. So let's ask, first of all, do we have a good connection going here? Can I act as proxy for you? And the answer there is yes. Okay. So the human body has this amazing ability built right into it to set aside its own needs to act on behalf of someone else. Okay. And so, so that's basically what's going on right here. My subconscious mind has set aside its own needs. I'm acting on your behalf now. So every question that I ask, I'm really asking your body, and I can actually release whatever we find on my own body, but it will release on your body. And this works very, very well. It's a very concrete way to do energy work. And by the way, we have over 1,500 people now, 1,500 people that have become practitioners of the emotion code through our certification program in 50 countries around the world. So we're pretty excited about that and at the rapid growth of this and what we're doing. So let's ask this question. Is there a trapped emotion that we can release now that is contributing to this back pain and hip trouble that you have intermittently? And see what the answer there is. And the answer is yes. Okay, that's the answer. So let's take a look here and we'll see what the emotion is. Now, like I said, we have a chart of emotions. The chart consists of 60 emotions divided up into two columns and six rows. So let's find out here. This first emotion that we're finding right now, is it listed in our chart here in column A? I'm muscle testing myself and I'm getting a no answer. My hand muscles are weak. So it's in column B. So we've just eliminated 30 emotions. We know it's in column B, so there's 30 left. Is it in one of the odd rows? So row 1, 3, or 5 in column B? The answer there is no. So now we know we've got 15 left because it has to be in either row 2, 4, or 6, one of the even rows in column B. So is it in row 2 in column B? No. Is it in row 4 in column B? No. Is it in row 6 then in column B? And the answer is yes. So is the emotion pride? We've narrowed it down just that quickly to a list of 5 emotions. Is the emotion pride or is it shame? Is it shock or unworthy or is it worthless? No, actually, it's an inherited emotion. And how I know that is because when the subconscious mind takes you to a certain column in a certain row, and then the answer is no to each emotion, we know that the subconscious has taken us as far as it can. And so we know that it's actually something that was inherited. That's how we find these typically. So this was an emotion that you inherited at the moment of conception from either your mom or your dad. Let's find out who. Did you get this from your mom? No, it came from your dad. Did he get this from anybody earlier? No. So he didn't inherit it. It originated with him. So at some point before you were conceived, he experienced an intense emotion that got stuck in his body, and then he passed it to you when you were conceived. Let's see what the emotion is. Is the emotion pride, inherited pride, or inherited shame, or inherited shock, or unworthy? The emotion is it's an inherited emotion of feeling unworthy, not feeling good enough to have something or be something or do something. And so do we need to know more about this emotion? Danny, do you have any kids?
No.
Okay. If you had kids, it's possible that you might have transmitted that to one or more of your kids at conception. But since you don't have any, we don't need to worry about that. So let's go ahead and release this trapped emotion that you inherited, this emotion of unworthy from your dad. Now, to release this, what I'm doing is I'm taking my fingertips and I'm just swiping from my forehead over the top of my head to the back of my neck, and I'm doing that 10 times. Now, what we find is that 10 times is what the subconscious mind wants when it's an inherited emotion, because normally it's just 3 swipes and you're done. But with inherited emotions, we do 10 swipes, and that doesn't take very long either. We're done already. And what that does is it actually releases that inherited emotional energy from you, but it also releases that inherited emotional energy that you received from your dad. Now, is your dad still alive or is he passed on?
He's still with us, yeah.
Still with us, okay. Well, you might want to just let, you know, give him a call and let him know that we released this on him and tell him that he may feel emotionally up and down for a day or so, and you may notice that as well. When trapped emotions are released, there's a processing that occurs as you feel echoes of that emotion as the body is really fully healing from that release of that energy. And so that's as simple as this can be. Now, if your father had inherited this from his father and maybe it went back 10 or 20 generations, it would release from every single one of those ancestors all the way back. And if we had time, I could tell you some really amazing stories about that, how we've had cases where ancestors have actually come back and really made their presence known, kind of like what happened with my daughter, where that grandmother suddenly was right there with her. But they've actually come back in even more concrete ways, which is really kind of amazing. We'll have to do another show just about inherited emotions. By the way, something I didn't mention was that the emotion code also works on animals. And what we find is that animals experience emotions just the same as we do. And we use the same chart of emotions. And there's no difference when you learn the emotion code for people. You also know how to do it with animals. So if you know how to use the emotion code, for people, you're a people whisperer, really, and you become an animal whisperer as well. It's really, really funny. In fact, I have to tell you a story. Not too long ago, there was a woman who contacted us, who one of our practitioners, and she said that she'd gotten a call to go and work on this dog. What had happened was about a year before, this little dog ran into the house to see its owner, and the floor had been waxed in the kitchen, and this dog couldn't get its footing, and it slid right across the floor and skittered into the edge of something really sharp, and it was really hurt. And so the dog ran right back out of the house. And for the next year, they tried to get the dog to come back in the house. It was a little house dog, and it suddenly was an outdoor dog. And no matter what they tried tricking the dog and putting out treats and kibbles and enticing the dog. There was no way that dog was going to come back in the house. And so I guess they had to build a little house outside so the dog, you know, wouldn't die in the cold and so on. And so after a year of this, they called this emotion code practitioner who comes over, and she finds out that the dog has a couple of trapped emotions. So she clears these trapped emotions from the dog. And basically the way that you do this, there are a number of different methods, but it's actually really simple to work with an animal. You can have one person who can actually hold out their arm, their outstretched arm, and then touch the animal. And you actually ask your questions of the animal itself. And that person who's touching the animal, their arm will either go strong or weak for the answers. Okay. And you can also test your own body to get the answers. But it's a fascinating thing. The subconscious mind of an animal is very willing to give up its secrets and to tell you what trapped emotions it has. So she cleared a couple of trapped emotions on this dog. And so I guess the dog just kind of sat there for a minute or so. And she was standing there talking with the owner, telling the owner, well, you know, it might take a couple of days for changes to take effect. And the dog looked up at him, and they looked at the dog, and the dog suddenly got up and it just walked into the house. So there's so many great examples. There's a whole chapter in the Emotion Code book about animals and how you can work on your own animals, animals that bicker, animals that have physical ailments. 90% of the time, that's emotional. Animals that that are doing things that maybe you don't want them to do. You know, maybe your cat is peeing in your shoes, or, you know, animals do certain kinds of behaviors sometimes that we don't like. And those are always caused by trapped emotions. And you can immediately change those behaviors in almost all cases by just removing their baggage.
That's fascinating, that. I must do some emotion code on my mum and dad's dogs next time I'm home. It's really fascinating. Yeah.
Works on all kinds of animals. In fact, I've worked on lots of horses, and I've taken horses that were very expensive horses that then wouldn't perform and that weren't really good for what they were supposed to be good for, which is winning medals and winning races and so on. And in one or two sessions of releasing their trapped emotion, we've been able to get those horses back winning. And it's an astounding thing when you realize that animals have emotions, it suddenly changes your idea really changes your perceptions about the world and how things really work. And, you know, we're so used to thinking the old ways that animals are really nothing more than just machines that have no feeling, really. And so it doesn't really matter. That's what we've tended to think, I think, throughout history, that animals are machines and we can do to them whatever we want because they don't really feel pain and they don't feel anything. They're just mindless machines, but believe me, they're not. In fact, one of my favorite animal stories I was called to work on a horse one day, and this horse had a problem with its walking. It wasn't walking normally, and they'd had a couple of veterinarians come and look at it, and they couldn't figure out what was wrong. So they called me, and so I'm there with another person who's acting as the surrogate. I think it was my wife, and she's touching the horse with one hand and holding her arm straight out with the other hand, and I'm asking the horse questions, and her arm is either staying strong or weak for the answers. Now, we had gathered a crowd. This was typical. There was a little crowd gathered around watching this, you know, watching this crazy doctor who talks to the animals. But the results we got were always just amazing and incredible. So anyway, everyone's standing around watching, and I'm asking questions of this horse. We find out that this horse has a trapped emotion of sadness. And so trying to get more detail. And so I'm asking questions, well, was this sadness about a human? No. Was it about another horse? No. Was it about a dog? No. Cat? No. So I'm running out of options, and a bird suddenly flies overhead. And so I thought, oh, okay, well, was it about a bird? Because I didn't know what else to ask. And the answer that came back was so strong. Yes, it was definitely about a bird. And it just seemed so comical. I started laughing, and all the people around were laughing. That it just seemed so silly. But luckily, the owner of the horse was there. And she said, wait a minute. I think I know what this might be about. A week before, immediately in front of this horse's stall, where it spent most of its time, there was a tree. And in the tree was a nest of baby birds. And the week before, a baby bird had fallen out of the nest and had fallen down onto the little pathway, the little roadway in front of this horse's stall, and struggled for its life and died. And the horse was a mute witness to this whole tragic event that played out and was overwhelmed with sadness about this. And so that was the emotion, and that's what had created it. And so we released that trapped emotion, and suddenly, they took the horse out and walked it, and immediately the gait was normal, and it was completely fine. And that's typically how it is with animals and people as well. When you release the emotional baggage, suddenly there are physical symptoms that make the change and just go away.
That's fascinating. It's brilliant. So you've done lots of work with animals with regards to transformational work, I guess. Do you work much in the way with people on performance, whether it be, athletes or other professionals?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. I've worked with Olympic level athletes before. And what we find is that emotional baggage affects us really in two ways. You see, if you think about the human body, this makes sense. The body itself is an energy field. I mean, if you look at your hand, that hand looks pretty solid. But if you magnify the hand a million times, you're looking face to face with a single individual atom. And we know that atoms are what create the molecule. You put enough of them together and you've got a molecule, and you put enough molecules together and you've got a protein, and so on and so on. And the ultimate building block at its most basic level for all of us is these atoms. Well, if you look inside of an atom, really, there's nothing in there really but empty space, and then these infinitesimally tiny energies that are zipping around at the speed of light. And that's really what we are. We're beings of pure energy. And so when you're feeling, when you're thinking a thought is also an energy. The whole universe. The earth, the sun, the moon, the stars, everything is nothing but pure energy. The chair you're sitting in, your house, the desk you're sitting at, your car, it's all really ultimately nothing but pure energy. And so quantum physicists have been telling us this for over 100 years, and it's really true. Well, when you're feeling a certain emotion, what you're feeling is a certain frequency of vibration, okay? You're feeling a certain energy. And anger is a different energy, a different frequency than sadness. And that's a different energy from grief and so on. They're all different. And when you're feeling an intense emotion, that energy can become trapped in the body. And a trapped emotion is literally a ball of energy from about the size of a baseball to about the size of a cantaloupe. And wherever these lodge in the body, they will create two kinds of problems. A trapped emotion will distort the normal energy field of the body. And because that's all the body really is an energy field, although it's a very complex energy field. When you distort that energy field, you're ultimately interfering with the expression of the body itself. You're interfering with the acupuncture energy. You're interfering with blood flow to some degree, to lymph flow. You're interfering with chemical reactions taking place in those tissues. And so if you think about peak performance, if an athlete, for example, goes out on the field to play, and that athlete has a trapped emotion in their body, let's say that trapped emotion is lodged in the low back, okay? That area now is weakened. And that athlete now, maybe that athlete had an argument the night before, or maybe 10 years before with somebody, or maybe they witnessed something, or they experienced some intense emotion for some reason. Maybe it was a breakup. So now that emotional baggage is distorting that area of their body. Now when they go out to play their sport, they are set up for injury. They are more prone to have an injury in that area of their body because that area is weakened. But you can't see that. You can't tell by looking at them that they are more likely to get injured. And so releasing the emotional baggage from athletes is absolutely critical. Now, think about this, okay? These trapped emotions have another effect on us, and that other effect is that they exert this very powerful mental emotional effect on us. And let me give you a concrete example of this. There was a man who came to me many years ago who had been through some traumatic things. And he came in to see me because he had terrible low back pain. It was a 9 on the 0 to 10 scale. And we found that he had a trapped emotion of anger that was trapped in his low back. And that was creating the back pain. I released the trapped emotion of anger. Suddenly the back pain was gone, completely gone. And this is not unusual at all. This took maybe a minute. And anybody can do this. There's nothing magical about me. I'm just here to teach everybody else how this is done, and it's amazing how powerful it is. So he was thrilled. He couldn't believe that his back was better. It was like a miracle to him. Well, a couple of days later, he came back in for a recheck, and he told me, you released that trapped emotion of anger from my back, and my back is fine. I can't believe it. But he said, there's something else that's happened to me that I don't understand. He said, for as long as I can remember, I've had this hair trigger temper, and I've just been angry for so long, and it's just become part of me. And he said, I'm always yelling at my wife and kids, and I'm always just, my anger is just below the surface all the time. But he said, since you released that trapped emotion of anger from me, I don't feel angry anymore. He said, I just feel kind of relaxed. And he said, I'm not yelling at my wife and kids anymore. And I don't understand how that's even possible. How did that work? And at that time, I said, I didn't know. I said, frankly, I have no idea. I'm not sure. I was just learning at that point many years ago about how this works. But I want you to think about something. Let's imagine that you're an athlete, okay? And maybe you're playing basketball. And it's down to the last point of the game. And you've got to make the winning basket or your team is going to lose. Tremendous pressure on you. And you shoot and you miss. Very likely that now the emotion that you feel, the emotion of maybe of shame or of sorrow or sadness or whatever it is, maybe several emotions may get trapped in your body at that moment. So now what happens to you? Well, now when you go to shoot another basket, what happens is, from now on, every shot that you take is going to be affected in a negative way because you've got that emotional baggage in there now, you see. And so if you think about, think for example about Tiger Woods, okay, and what happened with Tiger Woods. He was shamed in the media and so on about what had been going on and so on with him, and it was a terrible, terrible scandal. His wife left him and took the kids. Terrible stuff. Now, if you think about his life and think about what happened to him in terms of his golf game, okay, what did everybody notice? Well, suddenly the old Tiger Woods that seemed invincible wasn't there anymore, right? He couldn't seem to win anymore. He couldn't seem to play well anymore. And it took quite a number of years for him to be able to get back to something resembling his former level of talent. But he's never really recovered, I don't think. And I think a lot of people would agree with me. What happened there? I mean, was there some physical change that took place? Not that anyone could see, but certainly he developed a lot of emotional baggage from all that. And that was a consequence of, you know, of his own actions, et cetera. But the reality is that our emotional baggage can interfere with us in ways that that we just can't imagine. And as far as performance goes, I've seen people perform who were not able to perform. I've seen people who could not seem to put it together, couldn't seem to – they knew they had the physical ability. They knew they had the physical talent, but they couldn't seem to make it work until we ask the subconscious mind what is in the way. And then the subconscious tells us, and we release that baggage, and suddenly, boom, they're able to do it. Getting rid of trapped emotions is one of the most powerful things that you can do to improve your own performance. It's absolutely just astounding. So yes, that's the short answer to that.
That's fantastic. It's been very insightful and inspirational to have you on the call today, Brad. On behalf of everybody listening, I'd like to thank you for that. It's much appreciated.
Thank you. Well, I have an offer, a special offer for your listeners. If they're if they would like to get a free copy of the Emotion Code, they can go to a website called emotioncodegift.com. And this is my gift to your listeners, emotioncodegift.com. And you'll want to hurry to do this because I don't know how much longer this offer is going to be available. But if you go to emotioncodegift.com, you can download a free copy of the Emotion Code ebook. And you can also, for a limited time, you can download a free copy of the Emotion Code audio MP3s as well. So you can listen to the book and read the book. And I really just can't recommend highly enough that you do this. There's no strings attached, okay? It's totally free. But it's my gift to you, and it may just change your whole life. And for many of you, it may actually be the beginning of a whole new career for you as an energy healer. I believe that what this work does is it gives back the healing birthright that belongs, I believe, to every single one of us. And a birthright is something that is a right that you have at the moment of birth, that it's something that that you should have, and we're giving that back to everybody now. So
thanks for that, Brad. That's incredibly generous. I've listened to and read the book, and I definitely recommend everybody else do the same. So thank you.
Well, you're very welcome. Thank you, Danny, for having me on. I appreciate the opportunity to get the word out about this this amazing, powerful work to the world. We all really, really need it, and the world needs it.
You're most welcome.
You've been listening to the THT podcast with myself, Dr. Danny Scarhill. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Podbean, or any one of the other outlets where we stream. Like us on Facebook. That's facebook.com/totalhealthtransformation. You can also find more information about myself on my website, dannyscarhill.com. where you'll find lots of fantastic information and some free products for you as well. Look forward to seeing you on the next episode. Take care. All the best.
You've been listening to Dr. Danny Scarhill on the Total Health Transformation Podcast, helping you to eat, move, and think on purpose. See you on our next episode.